Hey there, aliens, ghosts, and robots. Welcome back to An Invisible Sun. Hi, it's Keith. You doing okay? Hope so. Last week, I know I talked to you about social media and how to get in contact with me. Well, this past week, as of this recording, there has been a large mass migration of accounts of audio drama producers from the former Twitter to Blue Sky. And it seems like Blue Sky is going to be, at least for now, a big home for audio drama creators. I am over there if you'd like to follow me and keep in touch at wkeithtims.bsky.social. And it's also a chance for you to find all sorts of amazing content creators, voice actors, narration producers, audiobook creators. There's a wonderful community that's being built there right now. And on top of that, so far at least, there's not the same level of toxicity you might see over on Twitter. So, come say hi and enjoy today's show. An Invisible Sun by W. Keith Timms. Chapter 17. Twine Drive is so curious. Better word is alien. It's so different from anything we understand of the nature of traveling. In Catherine's ship, we cruised at the speed of light, or very near it. And yet, it feels so still. There was no sense of motion. Outside, there was only the uniform blackness, save for the haze of purple light ahead of us and the red glow where we had come from. Agony 1 rested in this un-space, as if trapped in inky amber. And yet we moved. We started and stopped instantly with little more than a ruffle of turbulence. No one knows how it works, beyond what Shayot tells everyone. They use words like matter attachment theory and energy wave suture, but these words are meaningless. The name itself, Twine Drive, sounds made up. I was never close friends with any physicists at the university, but even they didn't seem to know how it worked. There were no twine physics classes. I don't think pilots like Catherine even know how it works, just how to operate it. How can we allow ourselves to be so ignorant about a technology that fundamentally affects our lives so much? But on the other hand, apart from vague principles, I knew virtually nothing about computer networks, rotor fan engines, how plastics are made. It's not so different. I had left Lucy and company in the lounge and strapped myself back into the co-pilot's chair. I was thinking about how much I should tell Catherine without endangering her. Catherine touched a few places on the control screen in front of her.
We're almost there.
Then her eyes widened in alarm.
Christopher, you're bleeding.
I glanced down. A fresh spill of blood ran from my neck and into my shirt. The lesion there had opened. I pressed my already ruined shirt against the wound to staunch it.
Sorry. Are you okay?
What a question.
There's a good chance that I'm sick with a plague or a kind of radiation sickness.
She looked me over as if searching for additional signs and symptoms.
A good chance? Yes, I don't know for certain. There's a blood test that can be done, but when I consider everything I know, how I'm feeling, what I've heard, I think it's likely that I have it. So, what does that mean? It means that soon I'll start wasting away. My internal organs will gradually shut down, and after a time, that will be that.
She sat up a little straighter, watching me.
Is there nothing that can be done? No, I don't think so. From what I've been told, there's no cure. Only a treatment to prolong the inevitable, and I haven't been taking it. What? Why not? Because I didn't know I should have been. And now it's too late for it to do any good.
She leaned toward me, a wisp of her brown hair drifting across her face in the weightlessness.
But how did this happen? Do you really want to know? You might be safer if you didn't. Safer. Right. I'm a big girl, Christopher. Just tell me. All right.
I gestured out of the cockpit window.
Because of this. Twine Drive. The gates. All of it. The gates give off certain kinds of radioactive particles. Over time, they will slowly kill the world. No one is immune. There is no cure.
She frowned, full of doubt and disbelief. An understandable reaction.
But...
She stopped herself and looked down at the control panel in front of her, turning my words over in her mind.
Is that what they told you?
She crooked her thumb over her shoulder, back towards the lounge.
I'm sorry, Christopher, but I have a hard time believing that. It sounds like some crazy conspiracy theory, you know? The Shayot gates are killing people? That would be impossible to hide if it were true. No, not impossible. With enough wealth, influence, and authority, it could be done. Happens all the time, and Shayot is certainly capable enough. Is that why Shayot is after you? What did you all do on Mars? We look for the truth. Well, okay, I say we, as if I had something to do with it. Honestly, I just blundered in. But after the death of my friend and seeing soldiers trying to kill me, I suppose I'm looking for the truth now, too.
Catherine folded her arms across her chest and stared me down.
I know. It's difficult to believe, really. Ridiculous. Absurd. But honestly, I'm not asking you to believe it. When we get to Marley, I won't ask you to stay. We'll find another way back to Earth. And what exactly are you going to do on Marley?
If she could not accept the reality of the gate plague, how could she accept invisible alien... angels.
It's the hard evidence we need to prove the Shayot gates are dangerous.
Neither of us spoke for half a minute. The space between us had grown cold, and neither of us wanted to look at the other. I hated how this turned out between us, but who could blame her for her reaction?
Okay, Christopher. I know you believe in all this. You seem like you have a good head on your shoulders. And honestly, I like you. You're sort of helpless, but you're smart and sad and open, which is a change. I don't want to see you hurt. So I want you to listen to me, please. You're a professor. You spend most of your time thinking, right? So think about something for me. I want you to think about how well you really know those people you hooked up with. And I want you to think about what they really want. You know, Shayot is the most powerful entity in the solar system, and that makes them a target. There are lots of people who want to bring them down, who want to turn the gates over to the planetary governments or take them for themselves. There are corporations that would love to see their monopoly go away. These people are not above sabotage, terrorism, or even murder. They're certainly not above taking advantage of someone to suit their own ends, telling stories and playing on emotions. So I want you to ask yourself again, how well do you know these people? How can you be sure about what they're doing and what they want?
I knew where she was coming from, but she hadn't seen what I had seen.
No, we were chased. They tried to kill us. They shot at you? No, but they had guns, body armor. We had to run to stay ahead of them. Are you sure they just... didn't want to arrest you? No. No.
The events on Mars were a jumbled blur. Running in the catacombs, Matthew collapsing a tunnel, opening the tomb and finding the key.
They killed my friend, Evan. You saw him? What? No. How do you know he's dead? They said his apartment was torn apart. Who tore it apart? What? The police... Shayot.
She wasn't there. She didn't know what I saw. She didn't know Evan.
Are you sure? It could have been them.
And she nodded back to the Invisible Sun members in the lounge behind us.
But he was working for them, and maybe they were looking for something he had.
It wasn't like what she's implying. It couldn't be. I didn't want it to be.
It's not like you think. I just want you to be sure. You told me earlier, right here in this cockpit, that all this isn't you. That you weren't even sure who you were anymore. If you're not sure of who you are, can you be sure of what you're doing?
I tried to find a pattern in the actions of the past couple of days. Something to link them. Connections of cause and effect, which pointed to the truth. Evan's message, the cathedral, the sheriff's interrogation, the drumming in the dark. These things happened. They mean something. Even if I cannot see beyond them, they must.
All I have right now is what I believe. I believe my friend Evan would not do anything wrong. I choose to trust him, to help him, and that has led me here.
But of course, he hid this part of his life from me. How much can I trust him after all? The ship shimmied, the stillness disturbed by a little tremor and a momentary queasiness. Outside the cockpit window, the universe returned, and the panoply of stars seemed crisper and brighter than I remember them. Catherine took up the flight yoke, and the ship lurched a little as the conventional engines cut in, pushing us out of the huge golden gate we had appeared within. The Milky Way was a ribbon of cloud, brilliant and ghostly. We seemed surrounded by nothing but those uncountable points of light burning so far away. But then as Catherine turned the ship, a shadow appeared in space, eventually resolving itself into a giant gray rock. An asteroid. It was covered in frost and tiny impact craters that I know must be millennia old, but still look new minted. Looking closer, I could see several tiny flickering lights in the asteroid's shadow. There were engines attached to the surface, pushing it along to somewhere. We were in the middle of nowhere, literally. The Jovian Trojans are a collection of asteroids held in a Lagrange point in Jupiter's orbit. Mining colonies like Marley send out prospectors to find promising asteroids, rich in metals or hydrocarbons or water, who then attach these engines to them and drive them back to the colony for processing. I looked around for more of the big chunks of rock and ice, but I didn't see any. Most depictions of mining life showed swarms of rock drifting everywhere the eye can see. The truth is, the asteroids are kilometers apart. A light crept up from one corner of the window as Catherine completed the turn. It's a small, yellow-white dot, glowing soft and forlorn, far away.
What's that? Is that Marley? No, that's the sun.
She touched the side of her headset, and her voice came through the ship's speakers.
Okay, everyone, welcome to the Jovian Trojans. We should be docking at Marley Station in a few minutes. Assuming I get clearance to do so. Get your things together, please.
I tried to catch her eyes, but she was studiously observing the navigation display.
Catherine, I'm sorry. I told you to quit apologizing. It's my own damn fault for saying yes, isn't it? It'll be okay. I'll think of something. I tell a convincing story. Which reminds me, I'm going to need to tell them something to get docking clearance at Marley. That's going to be a challenge. Why is that? Marley can be, testy. Let me give it a shot.
While Catherine fiddled with the control panel, I turned back to the heavens. We were approaching another asteroid, though this one was crisscrossed with blinking lights and scaffolding, all appearing tiny at this distance and scale. Huge chunks have been excised from this one. Digging machines clung to its surface, cutting into the rock, while runabouts clamped onto the carved pieces and carried them to a huge, waiting tug. Nearby waited a floating refinery, boxy and dark with pistons rising and falling along its spine. From the refinery, more runabouts ferried processed ore to a waiting freighter, a mass of gargantuan cargo containers arranged in a cylinder with twine skids attached to the back. Dozens of containers could be attached to the freighter, and more containers to those containers. By the time it was fully loaded, it would dwarf most space stations. It would slowly move into the gate, and then, within a day, it would be unloading the remains of the Trojans into the hungry factories of Earth. Some of the Trojan asteroids were named, of course, for characters in the Iliad and Odyssey. I wondered if Hector or Paris had already been ground up for minerals and ice. Once there was an asteroid named Hector, and now, perhaps, its materials were being burned in a generator or turned into the walls of an office building. We should not have named these worlds like farm animals. It makes it harder when the time comes to slaughter them. Catherine's voice brought me out of my reverie. She sounded annoyed, and her brow creased as she spoke into the headset.
We just need to refuel and maybe do a little trading. That's all. I've got a new line of products that I'm sure your crews will... Stand by, Marley.
She rolled her eyes and touched her headset, silencing the comm.
What's the problem? They want to know why we're coming. They didn't accept that we needed refueling. People don't just fly past, Marley. This is a dead-end gate. You have to choose to come here. And they want to know why we have. I tried telling them I was here to sell them some product, but they're still suspicious. It's odd for a sales rep to come out here without an appointment, or at least a contact. So, what do we tell them? I don't know, but they won't let us dock without a good reason. Ask Sister Lucy to come up here.
She hesitated a moment, but then shrugged, touching her headset again.
Sister, would you come up to the cockpit, please?
A few moments later, Lucy floated in, her expression concerned.
We have a small problem. Marley Station wants to know why we're coming, and we're not sure what to tell them. They aren't buying Catherine's story of trying to make a sales call. Tell them we are here to pick up cargo from Aubrey Barwise. It is, after all, the truth. Tell them I am here as well. You think that'll help? It might, yes. Do you have a last name, or... They'll know who I am. Great.
As Catherine turned back to the headset, I quietly asked Sister Lucy,
Do you know this Aubrey Barwise? I have never met him in person, but he is a member of the Invisible Sun. He worked with Evan for a while, a couple of years ago, and gave us a lot of information about Shield. He used to be a Starliner pilot.
Someone from inside Shayot. This was encouraging.
Then he should be willing to help.
Lucy pressed her lips together tightly a moment.
He is very sick.
She looked at me then, her eyes full of significance and apology. Well, of course. A Starliner pilot must absorb extraordinary amounts of gate radiation. Catherine was still speaking into her headset.
Yes, Sister Lucy. Like I told you, we're here to refuel and get cargo, and... Roger that, Marley Station. Thank you. Agony 1 out. Well, it worked. We have docking clearance. Just a few more minutes and we'll be there. Thank you, Catherine. Once you've dropped us off, honestly, you can go.
With a little glance over at Lucy, Catherine shrugged her shoulders.
I'm here. I might as well look around a bit. I've never been to Marley before. Might make a few sales. Would certainly help my case with my boss if I do.
I was happy to hear that she was staying with us. But I was also worried about her safety as she got deeper into this mess. More and more I understood why Evan may have hidden this from me, to protect me.
Are you sure? Are you trying to get rid of me?
Her little grin faded into something smaller and harder as she turned toward Lucy, silently redirecting the question to the other woman. Lucy remained placid and inscrutable.
We are in your debt. The choice is yours. I will go tell the others we will be disembarking soon.
When Lucy had gone and the door had closed behind her, Catherine focused on flying, her expression complicated. Troubled, angry, wry. We both lapsed into silence for a while as we flew toward Marley Station. An Invisible Sun is written, produced, performed, and composed by W. Keith Timms, and is a production of Alien Ghost Robot Creative Media. If you're enjoying the story, please tell your friends and family about it, and leave stars or reviews on your favorite podcast platforms. I hope you'll join us on our Discord server, or sign up for our mailing list so we can stay in touch. Members of our Patreon get to hear future episodes early, plus other cool perks for all our shows. Go to InvisibleSunPod.com for more information.